Hi, I'm Becca Otis from Five Lines Pottery in Indianapolis, Indiana.
And I'm Ryan Durbin from RD Ceramics, located in Southgate, Kentucky.
And welcome to Wheel Talk.
Hey guys, we've loved answering all of your questions so far. If you'd like to hear your question on the podcast, please send them to us on Instagram at Wheel Talk Podcast or by email to wheeltalkpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks.
Huzzah!
Started. We're live.
Hi, Ryan.
Hello. You look comfy.
I am comfortable. I'm on my bed today because I didn't feel like sitting in a chair is really what it
comes down to. The hammock chair is not comfortable enough. You needed to upgrade.
It is very comfortable, but the thing is that you're moving all the time, and unfortunately, I am hungover or still drunk. Nobody knows.
I don't think you can call it a hangover if the drinking happened the same.
In the same day?
Like, I mean, I was going to say day, but some people drink after midnight, which would technically be the same day. But I would say before you've went to sleep.
Before you've went to sleep. That's a good point.
I mean, I maybe you have slept since drinking, but...
I did sleep because I was too drunk to be awake. So, here, I'll tell you the story. So, keep in mind that, like, everybody thinks that I drink a lot, which is not the case. I do have a heavy tolerance, typically. And so, anyway... Start from the beginning. First, Lloyd busted his foot last night. Okay, Babs, you can't walk on the computer.
Babarooski. Hi, Babarooski.
Babs. Anyway, so Lloyd busted his foot last night because he decided to get into a fight with another cat. And so then this morning I went to a vet and got him some... She's gonna lay down right here. I got him antibiotics and I got him painkillers and stuff like that. And so anyway, I was like out of commission as far as work is concerned until 2. So then by the time I get to the shop, to the studio, everybody's outside at the studio. And I was like, you know what? The cats can't be out of the van for a couple weeks because of Lloyd. Because he's an asshole.
Babs doesn't really get out much, so.
Babs doesn't really get out much, and, like, I don't think that was necessary, Babs. Babs doesn't really get out much, and just keeping them both in is a lot easier than just trying to, like, you know, keep Lloyd in while letting Babs out and stuff like that. So, keeping them both in is just a lot easier. And so I wanted to put this fan on the back of my van that I just bought. So I did that and went very smoothly. It's all done. And then when I'm done, this guy who's Quincy is an artist at the studios that we're at. Keep in mind that Quincy like pretty much drinks all the time. Like I would say he starts drinking probably at noon. And I don't think he drinks a lot, but he kind of, like, day drinks, and then
I guess?
Yeah, he's super functional. And so, like, alcohol is a very big part of the studio, right? And so I get there, and one of Quincy's friends, Steve, shows up with a bottle of Hotel Tango whiskey, and it was half off from Kroger. And so, and also those little Dixie cups that are, like, from the dentist. You know, mm-hmm. The little tiny ones.
The little ones you keep by the sink just to get a little swig.
Yeah, that have, like, little animals on it. So we were all drinking whiskey out of these stupid little cups. And I had, like,
Did you eat anything by this time? Like,
oh, yeah, I've, like...
Did you have lunch and all that?
I had breakfast lunch... when I was waiting for the vet. So I had like one tiny breakfast burrito and so I probably consumed maybe like, I don't know, like
In shot terms, how many shots?
In shot terms, like 5 of the Dixie cups.
5 full Dixie cups?
Fairly full Dixie cups.
Okay. Those are probably 4 ounces or so, I would think.
Maybe 3. They were small. They were the really small ones. And so, okay. And like, I didn't even, I don't know.
So 15 just like, ounces.
What?
You had 15 ounces?
Potentially. Yeah, I was going to say probably about a cup of liquor. Like a full.
Okay, that's way more than a cup. That's almost 2 cups.
But... You're correct. That is way more than a cup. Anyway. Anyway, by the time and then Matthew was out there. My friend Matthew was out there, and he was drinking too a little bit. And like Steve was just talking to us, and we were chatting. And I realized that I was fucking wasted at the table and like got up, and then I was like, I gotta go, guys. I'm fucking drunk. And so I went to the van and laid down and then ended up throwing up and in the van, thankfully, like in a bucket.
In the van? Thankfully in the van?
Well, not in front of everybody else, but like, you know, in a contained area, in a bag that has been thrown away since. And, like a trash bag. And I texted Matthew and I was like, what the fuck? Like, I am drunk. And he's like, dude, so am I. And he's like, imagine fucking that. Steve. And like, but we both have like super high tolerances. So it was really odd that we were just so fucking drunk. We think that Steve roofied us. And he didn't, but like... anyway, so, yeah, and then we, like, came out, and we were like, Quincy, why are we so drunk? So that, like, I woke up from my drunken nap stage at, like, 6:30. So...
That's still a good time that you, I mean, obviously you're not feeling up to doing very much at that time, but...
Yeah,
if you felt like doing something for a couple hours, you could feel useful getting up at 6:30 and doing something.
I could, yeah. I went upstairs and I, like, loaded up the mini kiln and loaded up my tumbler with some stuff.
There you go.
But, so I didn't, like, waste the day. And plus, Lloyd got a whole vet visit, you know.
Mm-hmm. Unplanned vet visit.
An unplanned vet visit. He's consumed half of his budget for his life. And it was $90.
Sounds about right.
He's okay now, though. He's back to his normal, like, annoying self. And he's still limping around, but he's okay. So.
Okay.
Anyway, that was my day.
Yeah, that sounds interesting.
It was a lot. Like, I don't typically get drunk on, like, during the middle of the day. That's not really something that happens. I typically don't get drunk ever. So, you know.
I mean, I feel like that's not completely accurate, but sure.
That's true. I probably get drunk maybe like once every 2 months.
Okay, that's way more often than I thought you were going to say.
Maybe once every 3. I don't know. I'm pretty good about my alcohol content, but yeah. So.
Okay.
It was not a fun afternoon for me. It's not my favorite thing to do.
I mean, it sounds like the vet visit kind of sparked that, and then you were like,
I was like, the day's already gone. It's fine.
So did you eat dinner? Did you have some for dinner then?
Oh,
I saw you got a hot plate or whatever that's considered.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, since you and your like, appliances. Really
you were saying you aren't going to get any appliances, and you got a rice cooker, and now you got a hot plate.
Well, I said that eventually, once I got the fan, I was able to get the cooking things. And so since I have the fan, I can do the cooking things because then it can vent.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, I have a propane little camping stove and I've made some meals and it's fucking wonderful.
Do you already have some pans and stuff?
I have a pan. I have a pot, a pan, and a flat top, so I have enough to do things. It's been great, and I made dinner tonight at my friend's house, though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so they're going to Germany tomorrow, so I'm watching the cats. when they're gone for most of the days, and I'm sleeping here for most of the days, so I get free
watching
reign of the
their
kitchen.
Cats.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So.
Nice. Yep.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. It was a beautiful day today.
It was so gorgeous.
I worked my usual day, worked outside a little bit on the patio, and did some walked the post office, of course, got some time outside, and then cut the front yard, backyard, and all that with the new mower. I think I've done it twice on my own so far.
How is the new mower?
I'm
Do you
getting
like
used
it?
To it. I like it. It's pretty quick. I think I got all that cut in about 45 minutes.
That's nice. Tell them what you got.
So it's a zero turn Cub Cadet, some number. I don't know. It's got it's like a 52 inch deck, so it can cut 52 inches
wide.
Right.
Yeah,
you
sit
down on
it,
and it's got the arms, the handles that you like push forward and turn.
Okay.
It's not like a, it's not one with like a steering wheel.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a little bit to get used to, and I'm still doing a little bit of, you know, putting ruts in the grass a little bit here and there when I'm turning, because so much of the backyard and the side yards are hills. So.
Oh yeah.
It's not
it's like
so,
a straight 45 degree angle.
Yeah. It's not so easy to, but Kevin, Rachel's dad was helping me with, you know, the right way to do it, to like cut, and then you kind of turn into it, and then you back up, and then you go again. So,
okay,
there's a technique to it so that you're not overworking the mower and also
falling over.
Yeah, I'm not worried about falling over. It's more like the wheels spin.
Okay,
because there's too much like force downhill.
Okay,
so you're trying to like pull back on it, and if you're not you got to kind of roll into and go up the hill a little bit when you're going to turn around. So it's like a 3-point turn and the technique you have to do to kind of do it easily. So, you know, it's kind of getting used to it, but Rachel's done it a little bit. She's a little more nervous about it. She hasn't quite grasped the process yet. So I think as we go, she's probably going to end up cutting the front yard with the new mower if she can, once she gets comfortable with that, and then the side, and then I'm going to cut the back with it.
Yeah.
So,
eventually she'll probably get like more confident.
Yeah. And I was already getting more confident today as well. Like I cut a little bit higher on the backyard, like this side little hill. We don't cut most of that hill, like right by the house, because it's so steep, but I got another couple lines there, or, you know, 3 or 4 feet extra on that hill that I didn't do last time. So I'm getting a little more used to it. And then Rachel just push mows the steep part. So
yeah,
if I was just cutting the back, it'd probably be like 30 minutes. It'd be pretty quick.
My landlord has one of those mowers, but he has the stand one, and you like the landlord at the studio, and he cuts the back behind the fence, and you can just tell he's like fucking in his element when he's fucking mowing the lawn. He loves it. It's his favorite.
Yeah, it's
time.
Nice. I mean, I was, and it's got like a cup holder, so I was drinking a cider, and I was actually listening back to our Hope podcast that we recorded with her so that I could get ahead and get ready for getting it ready this weekend. But it was, it's getting to be more enjoyable, and you're not like sweating as much. Like, I cut it in this, like, I wasn't sweating by the end of it because you're sitting down, but. And, you know, it is kind of a workout of making sure you're doing the right motions, and gets a little tiring, but it's not like nothing like push mowing. So,
yeah, for sure. And I mean, like, you have a pretty large yard for push mowing, to be honest.
Yeah.
And also I would die if I had to push mow down that hill.
Yeah. I mean, it is self-propelled that Rachel was using for the push mow. So it's really just getting down the hill.
Yeah.
And then going back and forth on your way up the, like, side to side. Your way up. So, I mean, the time that she spent cutting the back is probably about an hour and 15, maybe hour. So it's about half the time.
Yeah.
And then, you know, she still has to go back and weed eat and stuff like that. So we're kind of splitting the duties a little bit with the yard these days. And it's not too bad. Like, you know, I just need a nice day. And you can't cut it when it's like semi-wet or anything because the wheels will spin and all that stuff. So, but yeah, that's been enjoyable. Other than that, loaded up a glaze kiln yesterday. Erica's been helping me with some new tests. I've been going through, I think we talked about it on here, I've been going through figuring out some new tests with the underglazes on the speckle clay. Mm-hmm. So the first four are going to be coming out of this kiln when I unload it tomorrow. So I'm interested to see how those are going to look. And then I've been sharing a little bit of the greenware tests that I've been carving, and we'll see how those turn out. I'm, you know, there's so many colors that there's got to be some good ones in there. And then we've just been, I've got a bunch of like spoon rest ready to go that I'm going to get underglazed here soon, or slip or whatever. And we'll kind of see how those turn out, because I want to, it's like a new body of work, I guess, of slowly but surely adding in there. So we'll see how that's turning out. It's and we're going to go on vacation here at the end of the week. So
yay!
I'll be out for a few days. Yeah, we're going to Dallas and Houston with our friends, our couple friends. So that should be good. We're going to see a couple baseball games and see a little bit of the city. It's like a five day trip. So
nice.
Pretty good length of time for seeing a couple cities.
Yeah. Did I tell you? I didn't tell you how the speedball went on the speedball underglazes on the earrings. They went really well. They looked really great, actually. Yeah.
The ones that you were dipping and you were trying out the thickness?
Yeah, the dipping ones. And so it turns out that I was putting a lot less water in than I needed to be putting in. Like, I should have been putting in a lot more water.
Okay.
Than the Darvan. So that was good to know. And just like thinning them down, there's only a few that...
What does it do differently?
The Darvan adds bubbles. And you can put too much Darvan in. But like, when I'm dipping, I want it to be almost like I would say like a milk consistency.
Okay.
Maybe like a heavy cream consistency. Heavy whipping cream consistency.
Okay.
So, that's it. Pretty much exactly the consistency I need. And, it was just really tough to get it to that without adding like a shit ton of water. And so, and on top of that, the Darvan adds bubbles to the underglaze, which is fine if you're brushing. And it's fine if you're spraying, but if you're dipping, it is not fine.
Not so, cool. But aren't the bubbles settled on the top though? So
there was like so many fucking bubbles in one of them that it's like they're still not gone.
Oh.
So
I see people like spray alcohol on plaster and stuff that has bubbles. So can you do something like that?
Yep, there's a lot of alcohol spraying for sure.
Oh,
Lots of alcohol spraying and lots of like tapping. But I got most of them down to a consistency that was good with minimal bubbles, and kind of like figured out if there was too many bubbles, I can actually spray the earrings with the alcohol and it helps. They turned out so good. They were on a red clay, which made it even better. And, oh God, the colors.
Are there favorites that you have?
I really love the orange, and what's crazy is that I love the mandarin orange so much, but I don't have it in my line of colors, which makes me sad. But
what do you mean? You didn't get it?
No, I got it, but I chose like 13 colors for the lines of the jewelry, and the regular orange, the mandarin orange was just close enough to red that I thought that the regular orange would be a better color contrast to the red. So I chose regular orange, but even the regular orange is great. Obviously the saffron yellow.
Yeah.
And this is on red clay, so it's all kind of different. But the burgundy, money. Fucking really? Money.
I'm not that big of a fan of burgundy, but it looks good on different clay. Yeah,
I haven't seen it on white clay yet. So, I mean, I have, but not too much. And so I'm doing a line of white pieces next. So, and they went through the tumbler good. I would say that they have a little bit more texture, which I don't hate, you know, which is nice.
Does the tumbler help with that?
Tumbler helps, but like, you know, sometimes when they got a little bit too thick, it, you know, had a little bit more bubbly texture, which was fine. Okay. All underglazes do that. The Mako underglazes do it too, so it's not
like a little orange peel sort of thing.
Yeah, it's just like trying to figure out the consistency of the, you know, it's gonna take months for me to get it down to a science. Yeah, so,
and each color is a little different as well.
Right. So, yeah, no, it was really great. I was really happy with it, and I'm excited to see them on the speckled clay, and then I'm excited to kind of see them on the other clays that I use. So
nice. I had a couple shows. I don't think we talked about them on here.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about the Spring Fair,
Spring Pottery Fair, the Clay Line Show. That was a couple weeks ago. And then I had the Duvnek Art Show this weekend. So, Clay Alliance, that's all potters. There was about 45 potters there. I sold 2,600.
Was it one day?
Yeah.
Shit.
So, it was good. It wasn't as good sales as last year.
Okay.
But 2,600 is still good.
Yeah.
And then did the Duvnek show this year. There's a whole bunch of, it was all mediums. So, and it was funny. It felt like it was a little bit of karma or something because I listened to the episode that came out that day. And we talked about the art show where they put potters next to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened at the show. There were three potters right next to each other, and I was right in the middle of them at the very end. So I think that was kind of a ad lib shift because one of the potters was on the opposite side of the street. It's right there on the river. So sidewalk for some of the booths was like half your booth was on the sidewalk, half of it was on the street. So it was a little bit uneven, and she requested to be on the other side. That was completely flat on the street. And so I think they shifted her there. And then because I got there later, maybe they did something else. They had me at the end as well.
Okay.
So I don't know if that was a last minute thing or if they planned it that way, but, or if they chose it based on when people applied or whatever. But yeah, it was a little strange because it was all the different intermix booths. And there were a few other potters, maybe three others besides the three of us, and it was the all three of us functional potters at the end.
Oh god.
I mean, the very last one had a little bit of sculptural stuff in it, but we're all friends, we're all in the Clay Alliance, so we know each other and whatnot, so it wasn't a big deal. But yeah, it was almost like karma got me. We talked about that, and then it happened at the show. But the sales were, I think it was about $1,200 at that show. That was one day. It did rain for about 30 minutes or so, but it was way better than I expected. The last time I did it was, I think, 2018.
Okay.
And it wasn't that. It is like a cheaper booth fee, so it was probably like $50-$60 booth fee, so it's not too bad. And then I think I sold about maybe 700 or something, or 600 at the last one I did in 2018. Okay. So I didn't have super high expectations for this one, but somehow it like worked out and it was good. So I sold quite a few carved pieces actually. And then like a lot of mugs. So it pleasantly surprised.
How much did you make?
$1,200.
Okay. Yeah. I'm like really curious to see, because I've been talking to a few people about like the economy and how this year is noticeably different than last year, at this time at least. And I'm using you as my gauge. Because
really?
You're a consistent show person, so
yeah.
Not obviously not this show, this last show, but like
it's hard to judge it based on last year though, because last year was the first year of a lot of shows getting back to normal.
That's true.
And people were spending a lot of money. I don't think the economy impact was as big last
year
as it was this year.
But I'm still using you. And, but
yeah.
But it is interesting to, like, it'll be interesting to see how much money people are spending this year as opposed to last year or the years previous. Mm-hmm. I just feel like I notice it a lot more now. People being like, eh.
I was surprised at that. I mean, my first show of the year at the farmer's market, I sold like $700 at that.
Yeah, that was a lot.
I was surprised at that too. But so that was a good like start. But yeah, I haven't really hit the point of the year where I'm doing a lot of repeat shows. Like I've done the Clay Alliance show before, so that was kind of comparable, but it was so good last year that there's no way I should have. I did expect that it was going to be as good as last year, but yeah. Maybe that wasn't realistic. So I think I sold like over 4,000 last year. I think it was like 4,500 or something like that. I can't remember.
Yeah, it was insane.
It was really good. And I think a lot of people did really good. It wasn't just me. So
last year was taco worthy.
Yes. Yeah.
And if you have followed Ryan and his shows, you know that when he gets tacos, he's done well.
I mean, we actually did get tacos after that show, but we got white boy tacos. We got Rio Grande.
Not the same.
Not the same, but.
Not the same.
We were mostly being precautionary for the not getting food caught and stuff. And we also wanted something easy that.
Yeah.
So that was good. We'll see how the next shows go. The June 3rd show, the West Side Market, like that one is one that I've done regularly every June. So I have good expectations for that. And those customers always tend to show up and it's a lot of repeat buyers there. So I have high hopes for it. So if it flops, there's probably something. But obviously it's a marathon. We got the whole season and we'll see how that goes. But
I talked to the farmer's market. I was like, hey, can I sign up for all of June? So I'm signed up for all of June in the farmer's market at Lawrence.
Is that the one you did last year?
Yeah. Even though it's like, you know, I know it's not going to be like a ton of money, but it's fun and I like it.
I mean, you just take a day off from the studio and sell at the farmer's market, right?
Right.
So.
It's a blast.
And you probably would have repeat customers from the past that would see you because you did it all last year. So,
and it'll be more like, I know that none of the fancy cups will sell, but it'll be more like jewelry this year. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice. Is Deanna still doing it?
Yeah, I asked to be next to her.
Okay. Is Haven doing it still?
I don't know if Haven's doing it still. I haven't asked her yet.
Okay. Yeah, I think the farmer's market's nice. There's the one like so close to me. Like Highland Heights has one right up the street and it's on Wednesday afternoons, I think, or Tuesday afternoons.
Right.
And I almost want to reach out and find out if I can get in a couple of those just for the hell of it.
Yeah.
Because it's my backyard. Like it's where I live. So yeah. I do the Covington one sometimes, but that's on Saturday mornings and
it'd be kinda Wednesday nice. Afternoon you'd have to take part of your work off and
I wouldn't mind that. I mean it would just be like half a day.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do it every week, but you know, maybe I'd do it once a month or something.
Yeah.
Just to, if for anything, sure. be a way to like advertise. Like I talked to some people about, hey, I do this because some people live in Northern Kentucky. They're like, oh yeah, I live just Cold Spring, just a few minutes up from, because I tell them I'm in Highland Heights. And then they're like, oh yeah. And then I just tell them about the holiday show that I do. So I'm like, yeah, every November I do a show and you can come see the studio and the house and stuff.
Yeah.
And buy stuff directly from me. So I think they, you know, they want to have that connection of somebody local to them. So
yeah, for sure.
It's nice to have that. Okay. Do we want to go to question?
Yeah, let's do the fun question.
The review.
Oh, the review.
Yeah. What do you want to do? Do you have it pulled up? The review?
I don't have it pulled up.
Okay, let me read the fun question. The fun question is from Dirt Spindle. It asks, would you rather be a bird or an otter? Explain.
I feel like the logical answer to this is a bird because you can travel anywhere you want to go, right? But My answer is an otter, because all they do is just sit in the water all fucking day. And that's really my life's goal, is just to sit in the water and hold somebody's hand. Like, that's all I want to do. And collect rocks.
Hold somebody's hand? Do otters hold hands?
Yes, otters hold hands. They're the goddamn cutest fucking creature on the planet. They just float in the water and they hold their partner's hand. And sometimes they collect rocks and put them in their little pouches.
Okay. They have pouches?
No, but...
Where do they sleep? They don't sleep in the water.
You know what? I don't know. But they do swim a lot of the time. And I really enjoy swimming. And so that's my answer.
I just picture, like... You're definitely, like, I just picture you at the YMCA. You're talking about how you're, like, laying on your back and the way you're kind of laying like an otter would in the water.
Yeah. Yeah. I fucking love water. I don't know why, but that's just the way I am.
Wow. They have little whiskers, too. I didn't realize that.
They do. Oh,
they
God,
look like otters. Little, their faces look like little, kind of like mini walruses.
Yes, but baby otters are the cutest fucking things.
Okay. All right, well, my answer is bird, because I kind of similar to what your first reactions were. I mean, I just think that being able to fly, and you're very small, so you can, like, fit in spots, and you could, like, nestle in places that's away from the weather, and...
I will say... The only exception is being a duck. If I could be a duck, which is a bird, if I could choose the bird and be a duck, because ducks do sit in the water all the time, and their flippers, they're really cute.
I like how they get their, I don't know if it's, if they're just cleaning their head off, where they dunk their head under.
They duck under and they shake off.
And then the
off.
Water, like, drifts over their neck and stuff. And then they go under.
Oh, hell yeah.
I've seen that at... I think Leanne has shared that on her stories before with her ducks. Yeah. Yellow duck and...
I would totally be a duck. Medium duck.
Okay. Ducks fly together. Quack, 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 quack.
Quack, 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 quack. Oh, God. We are such 90s kids. Yeah. Duck or otter... But I still really like otters. I do. I just feel like otters aren't like predator. Like, they don't get eaten by anything. You know, birds get eaten by everybody.
Do they?
I mean, cats, eagles. I know the eagles are birds, but they eat other birds.
I don't think there's that many birds that get eaten by cats. Are there?
Little birds.
I mean, in relation to all the birds.
Ducks get eaten by humans. Chickens get eaten by humans.
I don't know. Maybe it's just because there's so many birds, it just seems like...
Yeah.
You don't... I mean, you see random ones, like... That are, like, dead or whatever, but... I don't know.
Yeah.
Which one's more prone to predators? Probably birds. I don't know.
Probably
I don't
birds.
Know what the predators of otters would be.
Yeah.
Some kind of big... Are there big animals that are...
A cougar? A mountain lion?
Probably lions, yeah.
Yeah.
Lions or some kind of cats, wild cats.
Yeah. Coyotes.
Yeah, there you go. But if they're in the water, do the coyotes go into the water to get them?
Fair. It's a fair question. It'd be kind of cool to be a vulture.
A vulture? Because you can, you have a plethora of food options?
Yeah. They're predators. Well, they're scavengers. So they don't kill anything. They just kind of, like, Ooh. Eat the things that are killed.
What if
killed?
You could be, like, a bald eagle? Like, there's no threat of you being killed.
Oh, yeah, that would be
Well,
cool.
Not from humans, I guess, but...
I just feel like birds is a really large category. Like, there's a lot of fucking cool birds. Like, being an owl would be fucking dope. Being a raven would also be really cool.
What if it, I was just thinking like a wild bird, like a cardinal or a blue jay.
I would not want to be a fucking blue jay. I would definitely choose otter over blue jay.
What if it was a cardinal bird?
Yeah, same.
No? Okay, so you'd want to be like a big bird.
To be a big bird that floats or an otter.
Floats?
Floats in the water.
Like a goose?
Oh, yeah, like a fucking goose.
Isn't a duck technically a bird?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, so you'd want to be a duck over an otter.
Or a Canadian goose. Hell yeah.
I mean, they're so annoying, though.
Yeah, like, you'd be hated by so many people. I already am hated by so many people. Yeah, that's a really tough question. I feel like that's a really unfair question. Like, can we narrow it down to, like, would you rather be an otter or a bird smaller than your hand?
I mean, I'd still rather be a bird.
I know. I'd rather be an otter in that case.
What if it was duck or otter?
Oh, that's a good... I'd rather be a duck. I like their flippers.
Okay.
No, I'd rather be an otter. Because they get to swim.
They both can swim.
I know, but the duck can't... The duck, like, floats, you know? Like, otters don't float. They, like...
They're using their feet. They're just flapping their feet underneath the water.
I know, but, like, otters, like, actually swim. Ducks don't... Ducks just, like, bob.
I think they just float. I don't know. Do they swim? Marble. Figure it out.
Figure it out. I don't know. That's... We explained, but we never got to an actual...
I mean, I'm still on bird. And
you're bird. I've opened up a whole plethora of options.
I just think the ability to fly is so foreign to being a human that, like, why would you not, you know?
If there was a bird fish, that's what I would want to be.
A bird fish.
Yeah. A bird fish.
Okay. Don't know of a bird fish. Maybe a prehistoric pterodactyl, like some kind of pterodactyl something or another that can go underwater.
Fly and
but
swim.
Also. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
What about a flamingo? Oh my god! I want to be a flamingo!
Flamingos are boring.
What? Flamingos are pink.
Yeah. So what?
And they're humongous. Like, why wouldn't you want to be a flamingo? I've changed my answer officially to flamingo.
That's not even... Is that... I guess that's considered a bird?
That's a goddamn bird. It's a huge-ass bird.
Does it have to fly? I don't think flamingos can fly.
That doesn't fucking matter. Their legs are super long. Like, how awesome would that be?
I feel like they'd snap like a twig.
Ah.
All right.
Anyway, that's our solution.
Thanks for that question, Dirt Spindle. All right, do you want me to read the review? I have it pulled up. Or do you want to read it?
Yeah!
I think you should read it.
I don't have it pulled up, Ryan.
All right, I'll read it. Okay. This came from The Pottery Mason. And it was 5 stars. Title is Makes Me a Better Potter. I've been a Wheel Talk listener for years, so this review has been a long time coming. I will never understand the people who give the podcast anything less than 5 stars because the runtime is long. Well, buckle up for this review, buddy. I freaking love this podcast. Beck and Ryan have a wealth of clay and business experience that they willingly share for free with all of their listeners. Moreover, they're generous with their time and energy outside of the podcast as well. They're quick to answer any question with thoughtful responses and advice. This podcast has given me more great tips, tricks, and food for thought tips, tricks, food for thought, and encouragement than I could have expected, than I ever could have expected. Like many listeners, I work alone in a home studio, and Beck and Ryan have become like my studio mates. Their banter in the beginning and throughout each episode is welcome background conversation and regularly makes me laugh. It's been a joy to follow each of their journeys through the clay business, and their ups and downs and topics of discussions have helped me become a better potter and business person. Thanks for everything you do, Becca and Ryan. Never change. And to the jerks who give Wheel Talk less than 5 stars, honestly, get a life. Don't you have something better to do?
Yeah.
That's from the Pottery Mason.
Love it.
That's great. And they've asked us a few questions over time, so.
Yeah.
Very, very active listener.
Yeah. And I did a consultation with her 2 weeks ago.
Okay, so. That's great.
Fantastic.
Yeah, thanks for that.
We should probably talk about Hodkins.com.
Hodkins.
Can I get a Hodkins? Ryan, have you yet to install your LNL?
I have not. I have not, but I just loaded up my current one.
Yeah.
Last night. It's still going strong.
Still going strong.
I got the one nice thing is I loaded it up. I feel like sometimes it fluctuates on the runtime, but the last few it's been pretty consistent. Like I got the elements replaced recently and then I've been firing it. I load them pretty consistent, but sometimes I do fluctuate in like how I load it density wise. But it's been pretty consistent. Like the runtime and then the results from top to bottom have been like right on key. So that's been really nice. Pieces as it's firing, which some thermocouples can do. So that's nice. And then, you know, just keep loading it. I typically put some spoon rest there in the middle so that I can stack them up with multiple kiln shelves. I've got some small shelves that I put in the middle of a bigger shelf, and I usually put three shelves worth right there in the middle of the kiln. And then I go ahead and fill the rest of it and use those presets. I just kind of use a custom program to run it, make sure I get probably about a medium speed, and then by the time it's done, the vent's running the whole time, and then it's cooling down and all that good stuff. So it fires right on point, everything comes out well, and Becca's still trying to get connected here. But
can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay, great. What time are you at?
Perfect timing. I'm at 44:40 right now.
Okay, sounds good.
All right. And, yeah, that pretty much wraps that part up. I was talking about all the features of Fire My Kiln and stuff. And if you want to get a kiln or look up what options they are, you can do that at hotkilns.com.
Hotkilns.com!
Nice. Becca is back.
Okay. I need you to clap your hands at 1, 2, 3. Clap. Okay. That's good enough. That was fun. I have no idea what happened.
I thought a cat sat on something.
No, I don't think she did. It just, like, my microphone just went away. It was wild.
Something must have got disconnected. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know what it was. Anyway, it's fixed now. So, let's see. Our next question is... Should we do the kiln question since we just talked about kilns?
Do the next one, then we'll do the kiln one.
Okay. It says, so, I am a hobbyist. After 2 to 3 years of part-time slinging clay, I am actually finding out that, hey, I can actually make money at this. I have 2 stores that sell my things on consignment, and it's starting to ramp up, especially when one shop begging for more. Ryan, you have talked before... in the show about having a DBA. So my question is that something I should do also? Ryan Rem, Little King Pottery.
All right. So it sounds like you're actually starting to make money selling your stuff. And yeah, I mean, I think once you're going into, I mean, it sounds like you're still sole proprietor.
Yeah.
And, you know, once you start taking it seriously, you separate your funds into its own bank account. And then the DBA is really just how you, like when I get my federal identifying FEIN number, that's where I like specify doing business at Ryan Durbin, doing business as Ryan Durbin Ceramics. So, it's just kind of a way to, I guess, identify myself. And we talked about it with Jamie a few episodes back about the DBA and sole prop. Can you be, do you know if you could be a DBA without it being a sole prop? I don't.
Sure. So DBA is essentially just like, if you came on and was like, hey, my name is Becca. I own Five Lines Pottery LLC, which is like the backer brand of it. Essentially, you could be like, and I'm doing business as, let's say I bought a bar, but my LLC was Five Lines Pottery LLC. I would be doing business as Five Lines Whiskey Bar. That would be the DBA. So people own LLCs all the time, and that's not their, like one of, like my friend, she owns a bakery, and her DBA is like her actual bakery name, but her actual LLC is like Cupcakes PNW or something like that. It's like something along with cupcakes. But just because you choose a name at the beginning doesn't mean you have to use that name, essentially, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it could, like, your, like, his business name is Little King Pottery.
Right.
So you would probably want a DBA Little King Pottery, like Ryan Rem.
Well, I think DBA, that would already be Pottery. In the DBA. Like, you're already doing business as Little King Pottery. So, like, for me, I have a DBA of Five Lines Pottery with the number 5 and Five Lines Pottery with the FIVE. And I have...
And that's with the state, or is that
federal? Typically, that's with the state.
Okay.
I believe.
Yeah, actually, I think mine might be with the... Mine is the state. I was thinking it was federal, but the federal is just a way to get your identifier number for income taxes. I don't remember if that is... And I was just looking it up a little bit more in depth. It's also like, it doesn't have to be your name.
Yeah.
So it's a way to like have a relationship with the name that is not technically your legal name, but it is a business name that's associated with you.
Right. So like right now I have a sole proprietor and I'm Becca Otis, but I do business as Five Lines Pottery.
And that, for you, is that a tax thing when you're paying sales tax and things like that? That it's, that's why you have that? Or is it just so other people can't claim it?
Well, it's a couple, like, so other people can't claim it, but, like, if somebody wrote me a check as Five Lines Pottery, I could still cash it, you know? Certain things like that.
Okay. I mean, that is part of the reason that I did my business name, like, on paper is Ryan Durbin Ceramics, but for, like, shows and things like that where I write my business name, I just write RD Ceramics right. For branding and things like that. But it's Ryan Durbin Ceramics for my email and my, you know, my federal stuff and my state stuff. Like, everything is Ryan Durbin Ceramics. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think it's like you must do this right now or anything like that, but if you want to and you want it to look a little more official and get your ducks in a row a little bit more, it's not a bad idea. Yeah. Okay, Ryan, thanks for that question.
And thanks for buying earrings for me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he bought some for his wife.
Nice. Okay, do you want... I'll read the last one. Last one's from Aletha. All right, this one says, I've been doing some kiln tech work, and that includes loading kilns and firing things for other people, mostly students, not teaching. And I'm really enjoying it. Sometimes there are some glaze issues, like an obvious spot where it will touch the shelf that I just sponge off before loading. I can't catch everything with hundreds of pieces to fire, and my heart sinks over the ones I miss or the ones that act unpredictably. But here's the question. Am I robbing someone of a teachable moment with the minor fixes? At what point do you just fix it and keep things moving versus put it aside? Aletha Bean.
What are you...
So it sounds like she's like renting kiln space, kind of.
No, she's not renting kiln space. What she's doing is she's actually working, I think it might be at a college, and she's like basically the kiln tech almost. So she's like a studio loading tech. The kilns, okay, and working on like fixing the kilns if they need to and all those things.
Okay. I gotcha.
Yeah. So she's like, so these are students that are like getting a grade as a...
Okay, so it is in a teaching atmosphere.
Yeah.
It's not... Okay.
Yeah. So it's not like, oh, I'm paying for this and I'm not getting a grade. It's just, you know.
Okay. I mean, I think for Sam... What do you think she should do?
I think that really matters on the teacher first. Like, what the teacher kind of, like, puts in place. I'm a big proponent of fucking ruining something if they did it wrong. But...
Like, just outward... Just knowing that it's going to mess up.
Yeah.
And letting it happen. And then let that be the teachable moment.
Right. But I'm also a huge proponent in surviving kiln shelves. So, like... I think that that's where the line is drawn, right? It's like... Do you... That's why I loved having...
That's gonna affect you in the end.
Right. That's why I loved having advancers, because I didn't fucking care. I was like, well, in the kiln it goes, you know? I know that it's, like, really hard to not wipe it off, because I've been in that situation. It's really hard to, like, not catch it. But if you're in a teaching situation where they're, like, kids getting a grade and they're just, like, being careless... I'm a huge proponent of, like, putting it on a cookie and just letting it melt to it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's where I was going. If you want to save your job of the kiln shelf fixing, the cookie is the way to go. So if there is an option to use cookies, I think that's a good middle ground.
Yeah.
I think a lot of students won't learn their lesson if you wipe it and tell them after the fact. Plus, you might not even know whose piece it was. So, you know, you lose that teaching moment, or leave that for the teacher to let that person know, like, hey, this happened. We had to clean this piece up. Like, they're not going to remember that necessarily. But if you left the piece... That's another option. You could just leave the piece and not fire
it. Yeah, that is another option, which is a good option, too. Because then if it's late, then they get docked certain points, and they have to...
So they're actually getting graded. It's not just a community studio of students?
Right.
Okay. Yeah, that will affect them. And also, they would get affected on the results if their piece fused to a cookie or something too, correct, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, like, I don't know. I guess I'm just, I'd be a fucking really tough teacher, I feel like, in that regard. I'd be like, meh, tough shit. Like, but.
I mean.
But also, I think that it needs to be communicated with the teacher on what the expectation is. I think it's really not up to the kiln tech person, you know? It's really up to the teacher. Like, be like, bro, like, a lot of your students are.
Let's say the teacher, let's go two sides here. Let's say the teacher does tell the students, here's how you properly clean up your work for loading. And the studio tech knows that.
Yes.
They know that it's properly talked about beforehand. And they still have it come through. What do you do in that situation? I think you just fucking let it, cookie it and let it stick if it's going to stick.
Yeah. For sure. I mean, like, I still think you definitely need to talk to the teacher to be like, hey, if somebody doesn't glaze the bottom, what would you like me to do in that scenario?
Ooh.
You know?
I like that.
Because, and like, not in front of the kids or anything like that, just be like, one-on-one. Be like, bro, are we teaching them a lesson? Are we not teaching them a lesson? What's the plan here? You know? Mm-hmm. Because then the teacher's not, like, thrown off by it, but I mean, I think it's really a valuable lesson to kids.
Is that something that you, who is teaching that lesson in the end? Is it something you leave for the teacher to take over and talk with the student about? Or do you,
I don't think any,
I feel like the studio tech shouldn't be responsible for talking to the student about it.
Yeah, but no, absolutely not. And I mean, I don't even think the teacher needs to talk to the student about it. Once they get the piece, they'll fucking know. Like, the piece kind of speaks for itself, you know?
It could also be a teachable moment for the class that they're in if I don't know what format the pieces are being fired and unloaded and sitting out. Like, do they sit it out on the let's say they're at a studio and the shelf gets rolled out for this Wednesday afternoon class and all the pieces for all the students in that class get set on a table and then people get to take their pieces when they get to class.
Yeah.
Like, it could be a teachable moment for the group when people see that certain things fused and had issues.
Yeah.
And then the teacher can take that and say, okay, here's what was done wrong. Not to, like, embarrass the student, but like, hey, this is what could happen if you don't do this.
Yeah, for sure. Now, what do you think in a setting, like, apart from Aletha's, you know, setting, if it was in, like, a community studio, what do you think?
I think for the sake of your shelves and not risking it, I think you just leave it out and don't fire it.
Okay.
I think that's why wouldn't you do that also for a class? Like, you know, that is it because more's on the line, or is it less also does it differ based on how old the person is, like the student?
Yeah, for sure.
Are they kids that are taking a class for a semester, or is it community studio where somebody paid to be there for 8 weeks and you choose not to fire their stuff versus right, firing it and letting it fuck up, you know?
Yeah, I think that I've seen in certain studios they've had there's like a shelf to the side that's like, yo, not firing this until it's fixed. You know, like a you fucked up shelf.
They do that at Baker Hunt.
Yeah, like a you fucked up, but you still have time to fix it shelf, which I think is good.
It's just delayed a little bit, but
yeah.
You know, that's, yeah, I don't think that's the tech's responsibility to be, one, spending time fixing
right
things. Their job is to load kilns, unload kilns, make sure the, you know, glazes are mixed up and kilns are in functioning order and pieces are on the right shelves and unloaded kilns or pieces are put in the right spot. Like, there's so much work to be done anyways that, you know, fixing people's work is not part of the job.
Yeah.
As long as that's, like, agreed upon, but I don't see those duties as being the tech's job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think setting them aside is the safest bet.
For sure. It is definitely the safest bet for everybody. 100%.
Mm-hmm. What kind of, are there gray areas of, I feel like it's easy to just say somebody didn't wipe a bottom. Are there gray areas of where you're like, I'm not really sure, or if, what if a piece is cracked and it gets glazed and they're trying to fire pieces that you know are going to crack more, or the glaze is way too thick, or something like that, where maybe you have a standard. I think that would be a studio decision of like, what is our standard of what we fire and what we don't fire?
Right. Yeah, definitely. It's, yeah, I mean, that's like a sheet by the kiln that's like, this is acceptable, this is not, you know? That's, yeah. Oof. There's so many things. Like, I just like things fucking up.
What if they put way too much glaze in it? Like, they dropped it in the glaze bucket and then they took it out and wipe the bottom off, and you're like, the glaze is cracking, and it like looks like it's just so caked on there that it's just no way it's gonna come out.
Fire it. I'm just such a I'm just such a big proponent of like actions and reactions, you know. I think it's because that's how I learned, probably. Like, just things were totally fucked. And I was like, God damn it. You know?
Are there situations where a piece could risk other pieces in the kiln? Where you would not want to chance
in
it?
In that case, I usually, like, sometimes if I think something's going to blow up, I'll, like, put another piece on top of it that's not glazed. So it's, like, in its own little bubble. You know? So,
given that it's a small enough piece, you can fit
right, or like give it some room,
what, like a bisque piece or something.
Yeah, like a bisque piece, like give it some room, you know. But yeah, I definitely would give it some like space if you think it's gonna crack in half, you know. Maybe could put a kiln post next to it, so if it falls on the post instead of a piece. I mean, it's in community studios. If you fuck up a shelf, usually you have to pay for the whole fucking shelf. You know? Like, if you do something that causes glaze all over the shelf, you're up for like 30, 40, 50 bucks of a shelf. That sucks.
Right.
But that's a good fucking lesson to learn. I mean, and in that, at that point, you, as the community studio person, is like, I'm gonna fucking wipe this off if I feel like it needs it. But I think that there's a point, like if you're wiping somebody's pieces off, or if you're keep putting somebody's piece on the shelf, the no-go shelf, there's a point at which you're just like, no, I'm fucking firing this. And they're gonna have to reap the benefits.
Why do you have to fire it?
No, you don't. But what I'm saying is, like, some people don't learn. Like, what if Susie, we'll just say Susie Q, what if Susie Q, week one, has a piece that goes on the no-go shelf, right? And then she fixes it, and it goes in the regular kiln. And then week two, she has another piece that goes on the no-go shelf. And then she fixes it, and it goes in the kiln. Week three, same thing. Week four, I'm fucking putting that motherfucker in the kiln on a cookie, and it's getting stuck. Like...
okay.
Like, Susie needs to learn. After 3 weeks, if she hasn't figured that shit out, she's learning...
three strikes and you're out.
Yeah, like, she's fucking... like, no... no. You know?
Is there something different you would do if... let's say they glaze 6 pieces and, like, a lot of them are messed up and they go on the no-go shelf? Like, is there a threshold of...
no. I mean, if it's your, like, first time, you, like, didn't know, obviously know you're going to have some mercy.
And you still would fire it, or you would wipe it?
No, I'd probably put it on the shelf and leave it, like, you have to...
The no-go?
Yeah.
Yeah, Baker Hunt has a no-go shelf, and they actually... They have other standards of, like, if a piece is cracked at Bisqueware, I don't know how exactly they would say, like, maybe the bottom is cracked or something, mm-hmm. and they see an S crack. They've said they won't fire it. I don't know if that holds weight now, right. if they still do that. But they're trying to do that in a way to have students have higher
standards,
more pride in their work and standards yeah. in their work, so that they're not just trying to get finished pieces. They're worried about not having flawed pieces and just pushing them through the process, because it takes resources and glaze and clay and all this stuff to keep moving a piece through. And it's a goner anyways, especially if you know it's cracked after bisque stage and you're yeah. trying to get something through. So they've said they won't even fire it. I don't know if they just I don't think they trash it, but they'll put it on the no-go and tell you why. Usually they'll leave a note so that it's up to you to kind of figure it out and, like, okay, this is not gonna fly.
Yeah. Now, I will say that if I had Advancer kiln shelves in my kilns and I was doing a studio, sky's the limit. Ruined pieces all over.
I mean, the good thing about that is it looks way better because it's just a puddle and then it's fused to the shelf.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it looks a little better, but, like, I've got a yarn bowl that ran a little bit much and it's got, like, a little glaze area on the bottom. I mean, I do need to sand it off with a diamond bit, so it does take some work to get that down to something functional.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's also part of the process to figure out.
Yeah.
Are there pieces that also just...
It's interesting on this, like, in this question for Aletha, because she is doing a job, and she's like, at what point do you just fix it and keep things moving? You know? And, like, then I question, like, how many things are, like, having issues, you know? Mm-hmm. Because, she's right.
What if it's, like, 3 pieces in a kiln load?
3 pieces, then you put them to the side. But, like, what if it's, like, 30 pieces in kiln load?
And, like, you need those pieces to fill the kiln?
Yeah. Do you fix it?
Not 30. That's too many. I mean, how much time are you spending cleaning up pieces? Like,
I mean, if you have a sponge, it's just like you're walking to the kiln and sponging it when you walk to the kiln. I mean, I've cleaned up plenty of pieces.
But should you even, as a studio tech, should you expect to keep a sponge by the kiln so that you are actively cleaning pieces as you're loading them?
Right.
Or is that out of the question? Should you not even be doing that? Because that's their responsibility.
Right. But then it's like, it's that whole question of, like, do it right or do it slowly.
Yeah, because, I mean, you're kind of kicking the can down the street a little bit if you set it aside. You set it aside, and then you've got the relationship with the teacher of, like, yeah. okay, here's what you need to do. And there's a expectation of, okay, where is my job line? What is my job? What is not my job? What is your job as a teacher and what is not your job?
Yeah.
So, and also there's a gray area of, like, what's acceptable, what's going to be a risk, what's not going to be a risk. And the teacher might be like, that looks fine. Like, I just fire it.
Yeah.
And that could be because they don't want to either engage the student about it, and it's not something that they personally think would be an issue, but the studio tech won't fire it because they're kind of the gatekeeper to what gets fired and what doesn't get fired.
Right.
So you know, then you've got to have that conversation. That teacher's got to have another conversation with the student that takes away time from whatever they're teaching. And let's say you have four students that you have to do that with in a class because there's multiple things that have issues. Like, I don't know.
Oof.
Or if it's enough students, do you engage the whole class about it and show them as examples?
Oh, yeah, that's good. That's good, too.
Like, I mean, would that depend on the age group of the students? Would you choose to do that or not do that, depending on how old the students are?
Yeah, I mean, well, anything after high school, I feel like they're at the age, you know?
Where there's an expectation like, hey, this is what we have expected of you to make sure your pieces are ready for the kiln.
Yeah.
And it's not this person's job to do it for you. So this is an example of one that's like borderline, but it needs to be cleaned up because it's got two glazes layered and they're too close to each other. And it's going to run onto the shelf. For example.
Yeah. Hard question.
If it's a small enough group of students, I mean, you could bring those three students aside and be like, okay, can you all come in here? And then we talk through with those three students, like, here's the pieces that are at risk. What I want you to do is clean these up. Here's what you need to do. And some of it is, like, what if it's layered, like two glazes that are just on the whole piece where it's like, this is going to be running and fuse.
Yeah.
Do you have them clean off all the glaze completely?
No, I think in that particular case, you just got to cookie it. Like.
So then you set it aside just to tell them, like, hey, by the way.
I wouldn't set that aside.
If you use two glazes, this is what you're risking. But we're going to fire it. Or you just don't even have that conversation with them and you talk to him after the fact.
You would have to talk to him after the fact.
Okay. I like I think the cookies are smart regardless in a community studio.
In any studio. If you don't have advancers. Fuck, we had cookies in college.
Well, yeah. I mean, any studio that is with students and stuff. Yeah. Like my studio, I don't have cookies in my studio, but. You mean any studio with a variety of students in it? Yeah.
For sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I like that one.
Yeah.
What if one just fused the whole shelf? Like, do you just bring the whole shelf out and just, like, set it with a piece stuck to it?
Oh, God. The amount of times I've used a flathead screwdriver to get the rest of the glaze off of a fucking kiln shelf. The amount of times.
I think some studios, like, they make you clean it. Like, I think in college, if we did we had to angle grind it.
Yeah.
And clean it.
I have never angle grinded a shelf. Can you believe that?
Really?
I'm just that fucking good. I'm kidding. But I am very particular with my kilns. Like, extremely particular. And I've never had to angle grind anything.
Yeah, I've done it. Just, I mean, some glaze has beat it, like, fallen off and beads up on the shelf or whatnot. So you just kind of pluck it if you can with a screwdriver or whatnot. And then...
Yeah.
I have angle grinded just to get the little bits. Like, some of it will get into the kiln shelf if you don't put wash on it, and it, you know, you kind of do have to angle grind it, but...
Do you know what
I've also inherited some pretty shitty shelves,
You have so. Shitty fucking shelves. Do you know what I...
Not now. Like, I've got good shelves now, but the I old have ones. Some shitty shelves that I don't use as much these days.
What I have done, because, like, I had my oval kiln, and it was... Okay, I'm 5'2", and this oval kiln, I had to get on a stool to get in. I couldn't reach the bottom. Like, all the tall things had to go on the bottom because I couldn't reach the bottom. So, and there was a single oval shelf for the bottom. Okay.
Oh my gosh.
I've told you this before and you had the exact same response. Yeah.
That is so huge. How wide is this shelf?
Massive. It was massive. And my friend had to put it in because she's like 6 foot tall. And or I think I put it in before we even assembled the kiln, you know, so I could actually get it in. And like a bunch of glaze like fell off on the...
I mean, that motherfucker must have weighed at least 50 pounds.
Oh, it was heavy for sure. Yeah, because it was definitely, it wasn't even the Coralite ones. It was like just full straight.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and some glaze like dripped on the bottom and I was like, I fucking can't. Like, I can't even get the goddamn shelf out. So I just put a shelf right on top of the glaze and just left it there. It, like a piece of a shelf. Like, it was like a triangle of a piece, you know, like, probably.
Yeah, you basically put a little cookie on top
of it. Yeah, I basically put a cookie on top of it and just was like, it's fine.
Nice shelf cookie.
Yeah. And it just fused itself to the shelf and it was fine. Yeah, it was awful.
I can't believe they made that solid shelf.
Wild. Wild. Oh, awesome for huge pieces, I will say, but wild.
Yeah. I mean, normally it'd be two half shelves and then a big square shelf, I'm guessing, or a big rectangle shelf. Even right. A big rectangle shelf would be huge by itself.
Yeah, so it was two half shelves and they were the 23 inch shelves, and then a 13 inch rectangle on the inside.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's a big shelf.
Yeah.
Whew. Okay. Wow.
Yep. So that's always an option, okay. By the way.
Interesting.
Just to put a cookie down over the glaze situation.
I mean, it, yeah, that'll get kind of messy. There'll be, yeah.
I'm also a big fan turning shelves over if you can.
Oh my gosh. I wouldn't do that if you got kiln wash, but it depends on how good of
you got. I'm not like, a kiln washer, so. Yeah.
I never understand people that don't use kiln wash on regular shelves. Like,
I don't.
Well, it's your kiln. Like, you know what you're putting in there and you know what you're doing.
True. But you're talking about people in, like, community studio type places.
I don't know if community studios really do that, do they? I've seen people in their personal studios do that with no kiln wash, and I'm like, why even risk it?
Because they know what they're fucking glazing like I do.
I mean, some people I see, and they have some runny glazes. Like, they can runny glazes.
Well, maybe they're putting cookies under everything.
Possibly. But, I mean, I've seen some kiln unloads, and the shelves are bare. And I'm like, oh, okay. I mean, that's an option.
That's an option.
I mean, it's also sometimes tough to have kiln wash that is good quality that's not going to
flake
everywhere, yeah. But also, like, do you know the best way to apply it? I still have yet to figure out if, like, thin coat, like multiple thin coats is best, or like one solid thick coat.
Not a thick coat. Thin coats.
Not a thick coat.
I don't even think you need I don't think you need multiple thin coats. I would say just like two.
How do you apply it? What's the best way to apply it? I like to use a roller.
I think the roller must be the best way. I always used a brush, but.
Yeah, a brush for me is not as consistent. But
yeah,
it's also what kiln wash recipe you use. If I use the one from Sue McLeod,
is that the one that's like 50 EPK, 50 alumina?
I think it's 50 EPK, 25 alumina, and 25 calcified EPK.
Okay, I think I do 50 EPK, which just means you put alumina.
EPK through a bisque firing.
Yeah,
and it's supposed to help with not shrinking as much,
mm-hmm.
so that it doesn't like flake and all that stuff. I think that's the recipe. I'll have to.
No, that sounds right. I think you've said that before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How to make good kiln wash to protect your kiln shells.
There's a kiln, like, I feel like kiln wash is like one of those things. It's like a myth, right? Everybody has the right answer. Like, everybody has mm-hmm. the right kiln wash, but it's all different.
Yeah. Okay, Sue's kiln wash recipe is, she just does it in scoops, but it says 2 scoops of alumina, 1 scoop of EPK, 1 scoop of calcined and EPK. I think I said calcified earlier. Calcined, which just means you take an EPK and you put it through a bisque firing, so it takes all the moisture out. And you've got 1 scoop of silica.
Oh, okay.
And then she says flocculate with Epsom salt solution.
Interesting.
So, yeah, that's her recipe. I think that's what I've used. That was on her blog. All right, anything else?
No. We're
an hour and a half, basically.
Yeah, we're doing
a pretty good time.
We're doing a shortish episode this time because Becca's not hungover, but has a headache.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, nope, nothing else.
All right, feel better. And, yeah, we'll talk to you all next time. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, bye.
All right, bye.
Yo, yo, higgity-yo. It's Becca here. Hey, just so you know, thank you for listening. And also, we have... What do we have again?
A Patreon.
We have a Patreon that you should go, and if you want to donate to, you could donate to it. If you don't, that's cool too. But just Google Wheel Talk Podcast Patreon. Don't do the other one, because there is a Wheel Talk on Patreon, but it's not us. So make sure you get the right one. It's in the show notes. And also, leave us a review, because they're fun to read. Okay, bye!